Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Good morning. Good morning. Mike Cosentino.
We have one of our producers who's produced a series of in-depth studies, Bill Timmerman, and he's going to be talking about fracking and energy and stuff. He sent us a copy of the outline of what he's going to talk about. He sent us a large print version, which says something about our age. The print must be 18-point type. Bill, what are you going to be talking about today?
Well, today we're going to talk about energy. Specifically, we're going to talk about national energy policy, which is boring but very important. And more boring sometimes and exasperating, we're going to talk about the politics of national energy policy. But we've got a little story to tell you, and we think it's pretty interesting that will kind of highlight this very important issue. I mean, we have a number of heavy decisions to be making, or at least our government does.
So what's basically happened, Bill? We had renewable energy was the price of it was going down and down and down, and wind power was the cheaper than other sources of energy, including gas, depending on where you were in the country. And now what is this whole thing about fracking? We don't have fracking in Arizona, folks. So it's something that hasn't gotten, it's not a local issue, it's a national issue, Bill?
Yeah, it is. In fact, it's an international issue because the recovery techniques that we're using now for the new recovery techniques that we're using for oil and gas exploration and production are available for use everywhere in the world once they become standardized.
Let's say the obvious too, real quickly, that energy use and production and is so basic to the world economy and certainly the local economy and certainly the national economy. It's and that's what makes it important yet boring.
Yeah. Well, the point is that these techniques, once they've been developed in the United States, and we're the leaders in these techniques, they'll be available all over the world. But let's back up a little bit.
So what you're saying, explain to us what fracking is.
Well, let's back up a little bit here and talk about this in the sense of what we were expecting 5 years ago or 10 years ago. What we were expecting is that because of pollution and the threat of global warming, that energy independence was going to have to rely on sources of renewable energy, principally wind and solar power, although there's also geothermal and so forth. And we thought that increased research and development and breakthroughs in lowering the cost of these technologies was going to make them price competitive with traditional fossil fuel sources, and of course way cheaper than nuclear power. Nuclear power is the most expensive form of energy generation at the moment that you can employ. So we thought that the prices were going to come down to the point where you wouldn't need to subsidize renewable energy in order to make it competitive. And more than that, we thought that the so-called easy oil, easy to recover, easy to refine, was declining, was going to be in very short supply. We were going to have to rely on things like very deep water drilling and recovery of secondary oil sources like very heavy oils, tar, in fact. Large deposits of that were in Canada, but getting them out and getting them refined is incredibly expensive. very polluting and dangerous. I mean, you know, when the BP Deepwater Horizon blew out in the Gulf of Mexico, you get an idea of what the problems were going to be.
Right.
So we thought 10 years ago, 5 years ago even, we thought that the easy oil was gone and that renewable energy was getting cheaper. And so, you know,
sooner or later, we'd see the light.
Sooner or later, we'd do the right thing.
Everybody'd have a solar panel and we'd be.
And that's where fracking comes in. That's where fracking comes in, because what's happened is we've known for a long time that there was an awful lot of oil locked up in shale deposits.
Right.
It's like a rock sandwich. It's very hard layers of rock. Underneath it is softer rock that has filled with oil. But it's very difficult to get at. If you drill a hole down, you can only suck up a little bit of it. So one well, you get a little bit of oil, then the oil stops coming. So the U.S. Oil companies and oil drillers who have lots of years and years of experience came up with this idea of hydraulic fracturing. What you do is you drill a hole down through the shale there. You pump in water and a mix of chemicals at very high pressures, and the hydraulic pressure cracks the rock layer above that locks the oil in, okay? And then you pump sand and stuff in it that holds the crack open. Then you put your well down, and you can suck oil out from a much wider area,
sure.
Okay? Well, yeah, but eventually that well will go dry, too, and you have to keep drilling new holes. But what we discovered is we combined horizontal drilling, which you drill down and then you drill sideways, with progressive fracturing. There's a rubber plug that you move along that horizontal drill pipe, and you pump in your high-pressure water, and you break the rock, and then you move the plug further down the line, and you break more rock, and then you sink wells all over the place, and you can suck all the oil out.
So basically, it's hydraulic pressure. It's breaking up rock. It's releasing oil that you couldn't get out
otherwise.
But it's also pumping 1,000 different chemicals all together.
Well, yeah, it's not just high-pressure water. They put in solvents and other chemicals, most of which are carcinogenic, and blah, blah, blah. So it's a horrible amount of pollution. And the problem is a lot of our groundwater, our aquifers in the United States, are in or near these same shale deposits. So the danger is that you put all these carcinogenic chemicals will leak into the water supply. So there's a pollution factor. But the main thing about this fracturing is, A, it's very cheap to do once the technology is developed, and B, it succeeds in recovering these enormous oil reserves that we've had and we've known about for a long time. And it puts us on top.
And that's a big deal to Americans. Yeah. We like being on top.
So, you know, I mean.
By that, I mean oil production. It gives us the independence that some really strive for.
Yeah. There was a recent study done by Bloomberg. They have a what they call a new energy finance division that does research on energy sources, and they were looking at Australia. Which is interesting because Australia is a huge coal producer, and they have been exporting most of it to China because, of course, China doesn't have any oil, and China is in a boom state, so most of their energy production is coming from coal, and they're worried about the pollution. But anyway, they did this study, and they found out that wind power in Australia is way cheaper than even burning their own coal. To build a new wind farm runs about 80 Australian dollars per megawatt hour of generated power, as compared to, get this, from a new coal plant, 143 Australian dollars per megawatt hour. Now, it's true that renewable energy, wind energy in Australia is subsidized, but even if it wasn't subsidized, this Bloomberg report estimates that wind energy is 14% cheaper than new coal and 18% cheaper than new gas, and this in a country that has huge coal deposits. And that's what the kind of thing we were hoping for. They're still subsidizing, of course, photovoltaic electricity, you know, solar panels. But China is interested in solar panels because China has horrible pollution problems. I don't know if you saw those pictures in Beijing of people choking to death in the streets. So China, because their industrial capacity has managed to drive the cost of photovoltaic panels down considerably, but in most areas they still have to be subsidized. So here we got it, you know, just at the point where this is all becoming cheaper, along comes hydraulic fracturing. And that's a, folks, this is a big deal. The largest shale deposit in the United States, oil-producing shale deposits, is the Bakken Formation, which is in mostly in western North Dakota, but it extends into Montana and Wyoming and north up into Manitoba and Saskatchewan.
We were talking earlier in the show, it's 200,773 square miles.
Wow.
Spain in Europe, the second largest country in Europe, is 154,000 square miles. So this thing is huge. Yeah.
Well, and his numbers are staggering here. I mean, you know, 2,000 wells a year?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, right now, I mean, prior to the development of this shale formation, U.S. Proven oil reserves were 23 billion barrels. If they can fracture the entire Bakken Formation and recover the oil from it, it's estimated that it would increase the United States proven reserves to 400 billion barrels. That's 20 times as much oil as we currently know we have. And the thing about it is that this oil is a very high quality. It's what they call light sweet crude. It's very easy to refine. There are huge amounts of it, and it's very inexpensive to recover it by breaking up these shale layers. So the estimates are that this new oil from North Dakota, which is already in runaway development, will allow the United States to surpass Saudi Arabia as the world's largest oil producer within 10 years.
35,000 wells in Dakota, Montana, Saskatchewan, that little area there.
Yeah. I mean, right now they've only got 8,000 wells.
Only 8,000.
But they estimate that this area, once it's all fractured, will support. It'll support between 35,000 and 45,000 wells. And, you know, we should also note that these shale layers exist in other parts of the country, too. Most of the other shale deposits produce gas rather than oil, they run all the way down the Northeast, New York, Pennsylvania, into Michigan and Ohio, and down in Texas there are large ones. And these are already been producing natural gas for some time, and their increased production has driven the price of gas in this country, natural gas in this country, down to less than a quarter of the price that the Europeans pay for Russian gas.
Wow, I know my gas bill is cheaper.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about how we're going to get, what we're going to do with this oil and how we're going to get it, how we're going to transport it to refineries. And that's where you've probably heard a lot about the Keystone XL pipeline. I mean, the environmentalists are fighting this like crazy. And the oil industry is supporting it to the hilt. TransCanada is a Canadian corporation that with some collaborators is developing this pipeline. Now, there's always been a pipeline down from Canada, but this one is going to be much larger. And it's going to run, it's planned to run from Hardisty in Alberta, which is the heart of the Canadian tar sands mining operation, okay? This is the tough oil to get that we've been talking about. It runs right through North Dakota, where this Bakken Formation oil is being developed, and it runs down to the oil processing center that's been in Oklahoma for years, Cushing. Steve, you're an Oklahoma boy. Tell us what's in Cushing.
Oil refineries.
Lots
and
lots.
Transportation hubs and vast amount of oil pipeline. It's kind of a way station to get down to Louisiana where the main refineries are.
Well, that's where the rest of the XL pipeline is going to run. It'll run from Alberta down through Dakota to Oklahoma, a traditional processing area. And then from Oklahoma, it's going to run all the way down to Houston, actually to Nederland, which is near Houston, down in the Gulf where all the refineries are. And this can carry not only the tar sands oil from Alberta, but the Bakken field oil from Dakota. Right. You've probably seen in the news that there's a lot of fighting over this. In January of last year, there was so much complaint. There was so many complaints from people about polluting the Ogallala Aquifer, which is where everybody gets their water in the northern part. That northern part of the country
being badly drained already in Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas,
and it was going to run through the Sand Hills area of Nebraska, which is an environmentally sensitive area. So President Obama delayed a decision on the authorization of the northern half of the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, until after the 2012 election. Currently, he's supposed to be making a decision on the northern half of the pipeline by August.
So given your scenario, is this like the end of any possibility of environmentally clean energy? You know, here we like you said, we had this process we thought was going to come inevitably sooner or later. Many of us environmentalists wanted a little sooner, but now because we got cheap oil and gas, it's like this is a game changer. Is this the end of wind and solar? We all just, but it, what's going on, man?
Well, that's what the environmentalists, of course, are worried about, is that that this cheap oil and the quantity of it available is sort of going to end the argument for investment in renewable energy. They're really, really worried about this.
So as long as you can deny global warming, you're okay.
And, of course, our Congress, Congress is everybody's from the oil industry's got their hands in the congressional pockets, right? Congress has just recently introduced a bill, in fact it was last Thursday, to transfer the decision-making over the pipeline from the president to Congress, and its sponsors believe they have enough votes to overturn a potential veto. Now, okay, we've talked about the technical background and the economic background of a little bit of these new developments in oil recovery. Now is, you're right. It's time to talk about the politics.
What are the political objections? What are the environmental objections to fracking? It's going to produce all this oil and gas. A lot of it's done way underground, a couple of thousand feet down. There are impermeable layers of rock in between it and most aquifers. So what's the objection?
Well, that's what its defenders say. But so let's look at the politics. There's really two sides, okay? And I mean we're looking at a real political war. If you think the fight over the Iraq war was big, wait till you see this. If you think the fight over how much money corporations can give to people running for office, just wait till you hear about this. So let's talk about the pro and the con. There's really two sides. And let's talk about what their rationality is for the positions that they're taking.
Most of our politics is irrational, folks. We're talking a little bit about the rational side of
Well,
this,
we're trying to tell a story here. We're trying to have it make sense. Now, what Congress does after we get done making sense is up
right,
to them.
Exactly.
It's not up to us.
Yeah, next week, we'll be talking about the Arizona legislature, if you want to talk about irrational politics instead of rational
and
politics.
How they got so crazy. But go ahead.
There are real advantages to both sides. This is a real argument, folks. This is not a made up argument, okay?
And this isn't an ideological fight here.
No, and the decision may have more lasting and deeper effects even than a decision, say, on whether or not to go to war with Iran. So, or North Korea or whatever. So let's talk about the two sides, right? On the one side, okay, the pro side, you've got the U.S. and Canadian-based global energy corporations. And in the short and the medium term, they are looking to protect their existing investments.
Are impoverished mom-and-pop businesses, folks.
Yeah, like British Petroleum or Exxon. Well, they're trying to protect their existing investments in fossil fuel.
Like Monsanto and the family farm. We get it.
These people have got gazillions of dollars invested in oil drilling equipment, right?
Right.
And they don't want to see it go to waste. They want to keep making profits from it.
Right.
And also, I mean, they're looking at this Bakken Shale formation and they're just licking their chops, right? They want to benefit from the bonanza that this increased production will make possible.
We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, remember, right? These new drilling technologies are way cheaper than drilling 5 miles down in the Gulf of Mexico or drilling in the Arctic in the winter.
If you Google fracking on the internet, folks, the first three paid things are pro fracking articles. One of them is like, it's called Energy from Shale. I don't know who those guys are. The second one is Chevron. So there's a lot of money behind this already, and it hasn't even gotten fully going.
Okay, so that's the obvious big supporter of this. A second group that supports it are members of both of the U.S. political parties, right? Because, look, they're looking for a quick and relatively inexpensive way to restore U.S. energy independence, sure, which this will do, provide an immediate boost in employment in a really depressed economy, which it would do, yep, and increase U.S. security from the threats posed by instability in the Middle East.
Let me ask you, Bill.
Right?
Let me ask you, do you think that we have these on the positive side, do you think they will really be able to deliver? Because we've seen one promise of jobs by economic development after another, and the jobs never really turn. Do you think this will really deliver what they're saying or not?
All you got to do is look at North Dakota.
Go to North Dakota.
To North Dakota already. Yeah. I mean, there's a big article in Harper's Magazine, this month's issue of Harper's Magazine, where a guy spent months up there talking to people. It really is a boom town.
Yeah.
I mean,
be someone that rents rooms
some of these
or sells
people,
food.
Some of these landowners in North Dakota haven't made a living for the last 50 years, and all of a sudden they're rich beyond their wildest dreams, all because they've let people put wells down through their property. It's kind of like the fishermen in New Orleans. Fishermen in New Orleans love that BP Deep Horizon oil well because it supplemented their income from fishing. They could go out and when it wasn't appropriate to go fishing, they could go work on the oil rigs. And they were real happy about that until the blowout, see?
Okay.
So you got the same thing going on. I mean, it really is a boom.
It's delivering a huge boom to North Dakota.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the third group of supporters, the people that are looking for these good-paying jobs in a depressed economy. And people
Absolutely.
Are flocking to North Dakota. I mean, the population of North Dakota is increasing at an incredible rate. It's a real boom. And, you know, like one commenter talking to this reporter from Harper's Magazine who was looking at this boom in North Dakota, this is how he put it. It would be difficult to imagine the politician who will now stand between these men and their oil field paychecks. Amen.
Yeah, yeah.
That says it all.
So what is the other side, Bill?
We've got to first talk about the global warming deniers and the ideological folks who are opposed to any kind of government regulation of greenhouse gas emissions. That's another significant group of supporters. They're very loud and, you know, the Koch brothers are paying their bills. So.
They're not only loud, they're lavishly funded.
Yeah.
I mean, we think the debate in the United States take place between ideas, and the ideas are going back and forth. But a lot of times it's money plus ideas pushing anti-global warming, the global warming deniers. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not just a discussion. It's a discussion amplified and sort of on meth with money.
Well, you know, that's the phony part, but there is a real part. The real part is economic development is good for people, all else being equal. Problem is, all else isn't equal. Now, let's talk about the other side, right? On the other side, you get the climate scientists who are alarmed at how fast global warming is going. It keeps outrunning even their worst case predictions of a few years ago. And some of them think that the tipping point beyond which, you know, the effects are going to be irreversible is already been reached and there's nothing we can do about it. We're screwed. We waited too long. That's what they think. And then there's the environmentalists. They're not only concerned about the increase in global warming, but also about the pollution of drinking water supplies. You know, as I said before, they're coming from the same shale formations that are now being injected with millions of gallons of toxic chemicals that they need to do this fracturing, right?
And the oil companies want to keep the combination of the chemicals that they actually use secret, right? Because there's a proprietary.
Yeah. They don't want anybody else to know how they do it because they want a competitive
advantage. It's been like a pulling teeth to try to get the information out of them of what kind of chemicals are being put in there to increase the fracking.
Well, the other thing, there's an unpredictable element here, and that is once this technology is adopted elsewhere in the world, we don't know what global oil reserves are going to wind up being. Mm. We don't know what's in China, really, because the exploration of these other countries has not been as complete as the exploration in the United States.
I think that's a really good point. We think we know what the oil reserves are, and we don't know. You're saying this is a game changer worldwide.
A game changer worldwide. Yeah. That's right. And you know what? If we do find a whole lot more of this cheap oil, you know, not only does it shift the political balance between, say, China and the United States, but if we burn all that oil, you know, no matter what you think about global warming, folks, we're pretty much cooked if we do that. You know, if China, if there's many cars per person in China as are in the United States, the game really is over. That's it.
So cheap oil that we love, cheap gasoline that we love so much, and the price of oil has been going up, has a shadow side, right, which
yeah,
is that then we have bigger cars and there's less pressure to clean things
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody in China is driving a Cadillac Escalade, the game is over. That's
well, and fewer oil tankers, I suppose. I'm trying to look at the bright side here. We're not shipping oil ever because each country is producing so much of their own.
Yeah.
But I think they're shipping pretty much the pipeline starts in Canada, owned by Canadian companies, goes through the U.S., goes to U.S. refineries. Where's all that oil going? It's not coming here.
Wherever the world price dictates.
Yeah. I mean, it's all
a market. It is a global
That's
market.
That's true. You're right. It's a global market.
So, you know, we may be making as much alpha oil as the Saudi sheikhs in 10 years. And think about that, folks. That's why Congress is salivating and why the environmentalists are desperate.
So you're saying the environmental opposition sort of doomed?
Well, I don't know. See, that's the question that we're discussing here. And people, you know, people who are listening, assuming people are listening, are going to have some input in this. You're going to have to think about this. This is a real issue. And that's, you know, the third group that's opposed to this are the futurists and the political mavericks. They believe that, you know, we should go ahead now and invest in renewable energy technologies despite this boom because it's the only way to guarantee sustainable economic development in the long run. We're not just talking short and medium term. We're talking long term. Are, you know, our children going to be able to breathe? Is it going to be 150 degrees in Phoenix in the summer instead of 120 degrees? That's important.
That even fracking runs out of oil.
Should be important to Arizonans who live where it's already plenty hot, right?
Even fracking runs out of oil sooner or later. The only really sustainable thing.
Yeah. So,
Speaking of sustainable, one of the things that sustains us is Democrats of the Red Rocks, a local political group, and Democrats of the Verde Valley, another local political club that helps out Democratic Perspective bring you this great information from Bill Timmerman. All right, so what's the solution?
Well, you know, the solution is up to us. We got to decide, you know. I mean, right
is
now...
Has Tabak got to park his pickup?
Right now, if we do nothing, it will be decided for us, and I suspect that, yes, we're going to get all this oil, and we're going to burn it all, and then we'll worry about the future when the future comes.
But Bill, doesn't money win in a situation like this? Isn't it? I don't say it always wins, but I just think about the huge corporate resources, the jobs for people. Isn't that going to win? No matter how damaging this is long term and to the environment.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think the fix is in and the game may be over. But which of these two sides wins this coming political battle over how to supply these future energy needs will determine much more than how we power our factories, homes, and transportation networks. It's very likely that it will determine, at least in part, whether civilization itself survives the next century in its current familiar form.
We do cover the big stuff.
With your SUVs and, you know, your yachts and all of that.
But the fight is political, as you pointed out, and that's hence our...
What I like about this one is that there are rational arguments on both sides, and we don't have crazy conspiracy theories, and we don't have just...
That's true. This is different.
Just complete nonsense.
Different for us, anyway. Different
nonsense.
For the kind of crap we... Now, don't forget, VVID. This is great stuff, good information. VVID.org. You can hear all this again if you found this interesting. VVID.org. You have the entire podcast of this show. Thanks, folks.
Plus all the references Bill's been talking about to support his discussion. Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.